New York is the latest city to revamp its public school system's gifted and talented program. The city will no longer use an entrance exam to determine which elementary school students are eligible. They're trying to address criticisms that it deepens educational disparities. But several parent organizations are pushing back against efforts to overhaul or end gifted and talented programs across the country. Jason Grissom has studied this. He's a professor of public policy and education at Vanderbilt University's Peabody College, and he joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for being here. Your research found that gifted programs typically give the biggest advantages to high-income and white students. How did your study work, and what did the data show?
So the study that we conducted looked at nationally representative data of a group of elementary school students from across the United States and tracked them from kindergarten through fifth grade and looked at kids' achievement when they were receiving those gifted services relative to themselves in other years when they were not receiving gifted services. And what we found is that overall, the effects of gifted services on achievement outcomes in math and reading generally were small, but the effects that were there were concentrated among white students and students who were coming from the upper end of the income distribution. And that in contrast, Black and Latinx students and students who were from lower income households tended to benefit much less or not at all from the gifted services they were receiving.
Can you give us some examples of how identifying gifted and talented students happen in any given school year? I mean, we've heard stories of wealthy parents getting tutors to help their students with the tests, those types of things.
Traditionally, the way that the identification process works is that a classroom teacher, typically, or could be a parent, could be someone else in a school, recognizes the potential for giftedness in a child and then refers them to an evaluation process. And then that child goes through evaluation, which typically includes some form of testing using a standardized instrument that is aimed at identifying giftedness. It can draw on other measures as well. There might be teacher checklists or other forms of gathering information about the student's aptitudes. But then once the child goes through that evaluation process, the district will have some means of saying, this is the cut score on the instrument, or this is the total number of points that the child accumulated from all of these different data points and meets our local definition of giftedness, and then will be identified for services based on that evaluation. So what's important about that process is that it begins with this, typically with the classroom teacher identifying the potential for giftedness. And so that might make a lot of sense. You know, classroom teachers are probably the best position to know what the aptitudes and capabilities of the students in their classrooms are. On the other hand, we worry about the potential for bias to sneak in at that stage. And so that not all children seem to be equally likely to be identified as potentially gifted. And so many children don't ever find their way along that pathway to evaluation because the potential for giftedness is never recognized at that first stage.
There are other issues as well when it comes to leaving the discretion up to the teachers. I mean, we see that in many cases, depending on what school district you're in, kids are tested at the beginning of the school year. So how can teachers really give an assessment? Also, we've heard examples, stories of parents who say, yeah, teacher said my child shouldn't take the test, and I had them take the test anyway, and then they were in the 98th percentile. These are examples of how disparities continue.
That's right. We worry a lot about discretion in these processes. So there's room for bias on the teacher's part. Even in your example, though, of the parent who said, no, I really think my child might be gifted and should be evaluated. In most systems, parents do have the option to push their child into the evaluation process. But parents with different kinds of characteristics are going to probably be more likely to have the knowledge of those processes and are going to be more likely to encourage their child towards evaluation. So higher income parents and parents who are college educated are probably going to be more likely to have access to information and knowledge of the processes to encourage their child to move along that pathway. And so, yes, there are many places that a discretion-based system can create opportunities for bias.
Well, some school districts like Los Angeles Unified has started giving the test to all second and third graders instead of choosing which students get evaluated or having parents ask for their child to be evaluated. Have systems like this helped close the gap?
They have. So that's a system that we call universal screening. So as you said, the idea is we just take discretion out of the process and we evaluate every child, or we at least consider every child. And that ensures that, you know, discretion does not come into the process, doesn't create that potential for bias. And what we generally see when school systems implement these kinds of universal screening systems is that the disparities in identification between, say, high-income and low-income students or white students and students of color, those gaps tend to close under a universal screening system, which is further evidence that it's the discretion in the more traditional system is creating a big part of the problem.
I mentioned many parents are not happy with this decision out of New York City to completely get rid of the entrance exam. Essentially, they feel like it's the best chance at making certain their kids get the best education. I mean, you can't fault them, right, when we know all of the fault lines regarding our public educational systems.
I think many families do see gifted education as creating opportunity for high ability children. Children who have special abilities and talents, from the parents' point of view, have the right to be challenged by the school system, and they see gifted education as providing that kind of challenge and creating opportunities that are going to increase those students, you know, help those students meet their potential in the long run.
You mentioned the success of Los Angeles Unified. I mean, is that a solution to have all children tested? What are some of the ways that this system in identifying gifted and talented kids could be more equitable?
So I think universal screening systems are a good place to start. If we think discretion is creating the potential for bias, then we should take steps to eliminate discretion. And I think universal screening systems are a good way to do that. But if you want to create equity in terms of giving children pathways into gifted education, you probably don't stop with just saying, well, we have a universal screening system now, so everything will be fine. You have to think, I think, hard about and look at the data around what are the instruments that are being used and what kinds of outcomes are the instruments in that universal screening system. What kinds of outcomes are they producing in terms of what kinds of students are being identified? Because there are different kinds of instruments that can be used. There are other possibilities as well. So there has been a move in more recent years to think about, rather than using, say, national norms or a state level norm or even a district level norm for identifying giftedness. In other words, rather than say we're gonna take the top 5% of students scoring on whatever assessment we are using in this district and say that 5% is gifted, that we take the top 5% of scorers in each school. And that kind of local norming process has a lot of potential because it recognizes that there will be students, because of segregation, that will tend to students will tend to cluster together by income level. And those students who are coming from lower income backgrounds may have had fewer opportunities to develop the aptitudes that these kinds of gifted instruments tend to be trying to measure. And so if you choose the top 5% within a school, then that can help create more equity by opening up pathways into giftedness for a broader set of students within a school district. So there's lots of different possibilities. And different school districts are experimenting with different ways of trying to create identification processes that are more equitable. And I think we have a responsibility then to learn from what's happening in different places around the country that are engaging in these different experiments to generate some new ideas about what might work.
Jason Grissom is a professor of public policy and education at Vanderbilt University's Peabody College and faculty director of the Tennessee Education Research Alliance. Jason, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.